A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. And honestly, it's the most relatable server disaster I've read in months. He's got a home server that won't boot, kernel panic. Looks like hardware failure, but turns out to be a botched migration. Missing kernel modules, GRUB problems, the works. ChatGPT nails the diagnostics, walks him through the repair step by step, and he saves the operating system. But here's the thing. The repair took hours. Not because the AI was slow, but because every single command had to be copy-pasted from his phone into a headless machine sitting in a closet. The bottleneck wasn't intelligence. It was the authentication handshake between a headless server and cloud AI, and he's asking us to walk through the options. CLI tools, local models, hybrid approaches, for getting an AI agent actually on the machine so you're not just thumb-typing kernel commands from a chat window.
This is the exact pain point that nobody's solved cleanly yet. The AI reasoning is there. ChatGPT's diagnostic chain on a kernel panic, identifying which modules are missing, which grub config entries are wrong, what order to reinstall things in a crute, that's genuinely impressive work. But the mediation overhead is where everything collapses. You're standing in a closet with your phone in one hand and a keyboard in the other, reading a command off a screen, typing it in, pasting the output back, waiting for the next instruction. It's like having a world-class surgeon on the phone while you're the one holding the scalpel.
The surgeon can't see the patient. You're describing symptoms through a keyhole.
And Daniel's scenario is worse than most because he's dealing with a machine that doesn't even have a working bootloader. He's in a live USB environment, crooted into a broken file system, no display server, no browser, no graphical anything. The moment you try to provision a cloud AI agent on that machine, something like the OpenAI CLI or Aider or Open Interpreter, it wants to pop open a browser window for OAuth. And there's no browser. There's no window manager. There's not even a desktop environment to fail gracefully.
You get an authentication link printed to a terminal with no way to click it. Which is the moment you realize the entire cloud AI ecosystem assumes you're sitting at a laptop with Chrome open.
A Google account, and a stable internet connection. The headless server use case is an afterthought for every major AI provider. Anthropic's Claude API, OpenAI's API, they both support direct API key authentication via HTTP headers. That's the good news. You can absolutely set an environment variable like OpenA API KKA and never touch your browser. But the tools that wrap those APIs, the agent frameworks, the CLI assistants, most of them default to OAuth flows because that's what consumer-facing products use.
Daniel's question is really about which tools let you skip the browser entirely. He mentions ShellGPT, which is CBT, one of the better-known CLI wrappers for OpenAI's API. What's the auth story there?
SGPT is actually one of the cleanest options for this exact scenario. It reads the OpenA IAPIK environment variable directly. No browser, no OAuth dance, no redirect URI. You pip install ShellGPT, you export the key, and then you can run SGPT chat repair and start a session. The command would look something like SGPT chat repair, list all installed kernels, and it responds in the terminal inline no context switching to a phone.
The setup is basically two commands, and you're in business. That's the kind of thing you could pre-configure in a base image.
That's going to be one of our recommendations later. Bake this into your server image before you need it. But there's still the chicken and egg problem Daniel alludes to. If the kernel panic is caused by a networking stack failure, missing network drivers, misconfigured interfaces, broken DNS, then even with API key auth, the agent can't reach the cloud. You're authenticated to nothing. The terminal just sits there waiting for a response that never comes.
API keys solve the browser problem, but not the network problem. And that's where the local model conversation starts.
A llama is the obvious candidate, the easiest way to run a local model on a server. No authentication at all, fully offline, works on any network state, including no network. But Daniel already flagged the issue. Low-powered servers can't run these models at usable speeds. A Raspberry Pi 5 with 8 gigs of RAM running Llama 321B through a Llama, we're talking 30-plus seconds per token. A single response to a command like lsblk could take 2 minutes to generate. You'd be faster typing commands from your phone again.
The local model is theoretically elegant and practically glacial.
On low-power hardware, yes. But here's where it gets interesting, and I think this is the insight Daniel's really pushing toward. What if you don't need the local model to do everything? What if you just need it to do enough to get the network up?
Bootstrap and handoff!
A tiny quantized model, Phi-3 Mini at 3.8 billion parameters, or even Llama 322-1B, can't reliably walk you through a full grub reconfiguration. It'll hallucinate package names, suggest kernel modules that don't exist for your architecture, get the croup mount order wrong. But can it help you bring up a network interface? Can it suggest checking ifconfig or IP-link, verifying that the driver module is loaded, testing DNS resolution? That's a much smaller cognitive load. And once the network is up, you switch to the cloud API for the heavy lifting.
The architecture becomes two-phase. Phase 1, local model, just get packets moving. Phase 2, cloud API, do the actual surgery.
That's not how most people think about this. The conversation around local versus cloud models is almost always binary. Pick one, commit to it, accept the trade-offs. But disaster recovery doesn't work that way. You don't need one tool that does everything. You need a chain of tools that each unblock the next step.
Which brings us to the pastebin workaround Daniel mentioned. Before we get to the hybrid approach, let's talk about the quick and dirty solution for when you're already in the hole. Server's down, you've got a live USB. You need to authenticate a cloud tool right now. His idea was using a private pastebin to exfiltrate the auth URL to a second device.
This is clever and fragile in equal measure. The flow would be, you run the CLI tool, it prints an authentication URL to the terminal, you pipe that URL to something like curl.d at paste, .ht or 0xot.st or 0xot.st, the pastebin returns a short URL, you type that short URL into your phone's browser, complete the OAuth flow there, and the token gets exchanged. I've done it, but it assumes the server has network access at the moment you're trying to authenticate, which, if you're in a kernel panic recovery scenario, may not be true. And it assumes you have curl or WAable in your live environment, which is usually true but not guaranteed.
It's a manual process. You're still doing the dance, just with fewer steps.
Fewer steps, but each step is fragile. If the pastebin service is down, or your live USB doesn't have the right TLS certificates, or the auth URL is too long and gets truncated, all real failure modes, you're back to square one. It's a workaround, not a solution.
Let's map the landscape. We've got three basic approaches. 1. Cloud CLI tools with API key auth, like SGP auth, like SGP or Simon Willison's Elm tool. Fast, smart, requires network and pre-stored credentials. 2. Local models via Olimar. No auth, no network dependency, but painfully slow on low-power hardware and unreliable for complex diagnostics. 3. The hybrid. A tiny local model for network bootstrap, then cloud for repair. And hovering over all of this is the pre-provisioning question. What should you set up before the server ever crashes?
That last one is where the real recommendations live. Because the worst time to solve an authentication problem is during a kernel panic at 2 in the morning. The best time is when you're building the server image and you can spend 10 minutes exporting environment variables and testing the toolchain.
Daniel's experience proves the AI can do the work. ChatGPT is saved as operating system. The question now is whether we can collapse hours of mediation into minutes of direct agent interaction. And the answer, I think, is yes, but only if you've done the infrastructure homework first.
That infrastructure homework is what I want to drill into. He had a botched hardware migration, old machines salvaged onto a new SSD, and some misconfigurations from the original system tagged along for the ride. Missing kernel modules. GRUB entries pointing to the wrong disk identifiers, the kind of thing that looks exactly like a hardware failure until you squint at the logs.
Which he did. He diagnosed the hardware first, ruled it out, then realized the software was the problem. That diagnostic path alone, hardware versus software failure, is something AI is good at now.
ChatGPT walked him through it. identified the missing modules, told him which ones to install, gave him the exact grub reinstall sequence, the croup mount order. All of it was correct. The AI did its job. But Daniel still spent hours on this repair, and almost none of that time was spent thinking. It was spent typing.
The croup set up alone, mounting proc, sys, dev, and then the bind mounts, making sure you don't miss one and end up in a half-functional environment. That's 5 or 6 commands just to get into position before you've even started the actual repair.
Every one of those commands came from a phone screen. Read, type, verify, execute, copy the output, paste it back into the chat, read the next instruction, type again. It's not a repair process at that point, it's data entry. And that's the core tension Daniel is pointing at. The bottleneck isn't the AI's diagnostic reasoning, it's the authentication and provisioning layer between the AI and the machine it's trying to fix.
Why can't we just pipe ChatGPT into a terminal? That's the question sitting under this whole thing.
Two reasons, and they're both about trust boundaries. First, ChatGPT is a consumer product. It authenticates through your OpenAI account via a browser flow because that's how consumer web apps work. It's not designed to be a headless system tool. Second, even if you could pipe it in, the AI doesn't have access to your terminal. It can't see the output of the commands it suggests unless you paste it back. It's a conversation, not a session.
It's the difference between a consultant who emails you instructions and a technician who's actually in the server room with a keyboard.
Daniel wants the technician. So what we're really evaluating here is how to get from consultant to technician, from a chat window on a phone, to an agent that's actually executing commands on the broken machine. And that means solving two separate problems. One, how does the agent authenticate without a browser? Two, how does the agent reach the AI backend if the network is down?
Those are different failure pattern with different solutions, and they compound. No browser plus no network is the worst case. API key auth solves the first, but not the second. Local models solve the second, but introduce the performance problem.
Let's start with the authentication problem itself, because that's where Daniel's frustration really crystallizes. The reason OAuth is such a pain on headless machines isn't just that there's no browser. It's that the entire flow assumes a human is sitting in front of a graphical session. The tool prints a URL, you click it, your browser sends your existing session cookies, the provider confirms your identity, and a token comes back. On a headless server, every single one of those steps breaks.
No browser, no cookies, no session, no click.
Some tools try to be clever about it. Aider, for example, when you run it for the first time, it tries to pop open your default browser. If you're on a desktop, great. If you're SSH'd into a server with no X11 forwarding, it either hangs or throws an error that's about as helpful as cannot open display. Open Interpreter, now called 01, had the same issue before they added headless mode in version 0.
The tool assumes a graphical environment, fails, and you're left staring at a URL you can't click. Daniel's pastebin idea is the natural human reaction to that. Just get the URL off the machine somehow.
The mechanics of it are straightforward. You do something like echo the auth URL, pipe it to curl with a post to oexa.... and it spits back a short URL you can type into your phone. But there's a subtlety here that's easy to miss. Some OAuth flows embed the redirect URI in the auth URL itself, and that redirect URI is often localhost, something like localhost 8008i callback. If you complete the OAuth flow on your phone, the provider tries to redirect your phone's browser to localhost, which obviously doesn't work because your phone isn't running the CLI tool.
The token gets issued but never delivered to the machine that needs it.
Some tools handle this by running a temporary local HTTP server to catch the callback. That's the standard OAuth desktop flow. But if the tool is running on the headless server and you're authenticating on your phone, that local server is unreachable. The redirect dies in transit. So the pastebin trick only works reliably if the tool supports a manual copy-paste fallback, where it gives you a code to enter after authentication, what OAuth calls the device authorization flow.
Which most CLI tools don't implement because it's extra work and most users are on desktops.
So the pastebin approach is clever, it's a good emergency hatch, but it's fragile in exactly the ways you'd expect a workaround to be fragile. The more robust answer is to avoid OAuth entirely and use API keys.
This is where SGPT shines. Open EA API key in the environment. Done.
It's not just SGPT. Simon Willison's LM tool, lowercase LLM, supports the same pattern. and it's actually more flexible because it works with multiple providers. You can set OpenAI API KI for OpenAI, Anthropic IKE for Claude, and switch between them with a flag. The setup is pip install lm, then lm keys set OpenAI, paste your key, and you're done. No browser, no redirect, no callback server.
The API key approach completely sidesteps the OAuth circus, but it does shift the burden to key management. You're storing a secret on the server.
That's the objection people raise. API keys on a server are insecure. But it's no less secure than storing SSH keys, which every server already does. You put it in an environment variable, you restrict file permissions, you rotate it periodically. The real risk isn't the key sitting on the server. It's the key getting leaked in logs or shell history if you're not careful.
The security concern is manageable. The bigger problem, which Daniel already spotted, is that even with a perfectly configured API key, the agent still needs to reach the cloud. If the reason you're in a live USB environment is that the kernel can't find the network driver, you're authenticated to nowhere.
That's the chicken and egg loop. The AI can tell you exactly which network module you're missing, but it can't tell you because it can't reach you. And you can't reach it because the network is down because the module is missing. That's the point where cloud-only solutions hit a wall, and you have to start thinking about local models. Let's talk about OLAMA, because it's the obvious answer to the network down problem, and it's also where the most magical thinking happens. The pitch is seductive, download a model, run it locally, zero authentication, zero network dependency, your server becomes its own AI repair technician. And on paper, that's real. You can pull LLAMA 321B, Phi3 Mini, any of the small quantized models, and they'll run entirely offline.
Then you actually try it on a Raspberry Pi 5 with 8 gigs of RAM, and the fantasy collides with the laws of physics.
I've seen the benchmarks. Running LLAMA 321B through OLAMA on a Pi 5, you're looking at 30 plus seconds per token. A single response to something as basic as run lsblake and tell me what you see takes upwards of 2 minutes to generate. And that's not the model thinking. That's the CPU grinding through matrix multiplications with no GPU acceleration on an ARM chip that was never designed for this workload.
2 minutes for lsblake. The phone copy-paste method starts looking fast again.
That's on a Pi 5, which is actually one of the more capable low-power boards. Drop down to a Pi 4 with 4 gigs or an old Intel NUC from 5 years ago, and you're measuring response time with a calendar. But speed isn't even the whole problem. The deeper issue is whether these tiny models can actually do the diagnostic reasoning.
That's the question Daniel's really asking. Can a 1B or 3B model handle kernel panic diagnosis? Or does it just confidently hallucinate GUB syntax at you?
The honest answer is, they struggle. These small models, Phi3 Mini at 3.8 billion parameters, LLAMA 3.2 at 1B. They're impressive for their size, but multi-step system repair is exactly the kind of task that exposes their weaknesses. They'll suggest kernel modules that don't exist for your architecture. They'll mix up Debian and Arch package names. They'll tell you to run grub install on the wrong disk. And they do it with total confidence, which is worse than being wrong. It's being wrong while sounding authoritative.
You're debugging the debugger. You're back to squinting at the AI's output, wondering if this particular command will fix your bootloader or nuke your partition table.
That's the trust problem. With ChatGPT or Claude, the diagnostic chain is reliable enough that you can follow it with reasonable confidence. With a 1B local model, you're essentially pair programming with an overconfident intern who read the Arch Wiki once. For bootstrapping, getting a network interface up, checking if the driver is loaded, testing basic connectivity, that's within reach. The cognitive load is small, the commands are standard, the failure pattern are obvious. But for the actual repair? Rebuilding grub config, selecting the right kernel modules for your specific hardware, untangling a crude environment with bind mounts? That's where the small models fall apart.
Which brings us to the hybrid. And I think this is the idea that actually moves the conversation forward. Most people frame this as local or cloud. Pick your team. But disaster recovery is inherently multi-stage. You don't need one model that does everything. You need a chain where each link unblocks the next.
The two-phase approach. Phase 1, a tiny local model, maybe 1 to 3 billion parameters, running through a LLAMA on a live USB. Its only job is to get the network stack up. It doesn't need to be brilliant. It just needs to know enough to help you check interface status, verify driver modules, test DNS, maybe suggest a DA client restart. Once the network is alive, phase 2 kicks in. The cloud API takes over for the actual surgery. Kernel module selection, grub repair, the crut dance, all the stuff that requires real reasoning goes to GPT-40 or Claude.
The local model doesn't need to be fast for this. Even if it takes 2 minutes to suggest checking a blink, that's still faster than manually diagnosing a network stack failure from scratch.
The metric isn't tokens per second, it's, does this get me to a working network faster than I'd get there on my own? And for a lot of failure pattern, the answer is yes. But this two-phase design isn't something any existing tool does out of the box. You'd have to script it yourself. A wrapper that detects network state, routes to the local model if the network is down, then switches to the cloud API once connectivity is confirmed.
Which is doable, but not trivial. And it points to a gap in the tooling ecosystem. Nobody's building disaster, recovery-specific agent orchestration.
The closest we've got are tools like Open Interpreter, now branded as O1, and Aider. Both support headless mode with API key auth now. O1 added it in version 0.0, and Aider has supported it for a while through environment variables. But here's the catch. They assume a working Python environment and a working network. If you're in a live USB with no pip and no internet, you can't even install them. You're back to manual crut.
The tools that could help are themselves dependent on the thing they're supposed to fix. It's turtles all the way down.
Which is why the ultimate workaround, and I think this is where Daniel should land, is pre-provisioning. Before the server ever crashes, you build a rescue USB with everything baked in. A live Linux image with Llama installed, a tiny model pre-downloaded. Something like Phi-3 Mini or Llama 3.2.1b, plus a script that auto-starts a repair session when you boot from the USB. The script checks network state, tries the cloud API first, falls back to the local model if there's no connectivity, and walks you through the bootstrap.
You're not solving the authentication problem during the crisis. You solved it last Tuesday when you had coffee and a working internet connection.
That's the meta lesson here. The AI can do the repair. Daniel proved that ChatGPT saved his operating system. But the infrastructure around the AI, the auth, the provisioning, the network dependency, that's the weak link. And weak links don't get fixed at 2 in the morning during a kernel panic. They get fixed in advance, when you're building the server image and you can spend 10 minutes exporting API keys and testing the toolchain. Let's make this concrete. 3 things you can do right now before your server ever panics. Number 1. Pre-configure a CLI agent with API key auth as part of your base image. This is the single highest leverage move. Export Openna API KE in your BashRK, install SGPT or LM, and test it once. If you do nothing else, do this.
The exact commands matter here. Not consider setting up. The actual lines someone should type.
Pip install shell GPT, then echo export. Openna API key equals your key into dot bashrc, source it, and run SGPT to chat test, say hello. If it responds, you're provisioned. For Simon Willison's LM tool, it's pip install LM, then LM keys set OpenI, paste the key, done. Both tools support multiple providers. You can add an Anthropic key the same way with LM keys set Anthropic. 10 minutes of setup while the server is healthy saves you hours when it's not.
The security objection people raise. Storing an API key on a server. You mentioned earlier, it's no worse than SSH keys.
It's the same threat model. Your SSH private key can give an attacker root access to the entire machine. An API key gives them access to make requests to OpenAI or Anthropic, which costs you money, yes, but doesn't grant shell access. Rotate the key periodically, restrict the bashrc permissions to 600, and don't hardcode keys in scripts that get committed to Git. This is basic secret hygiene, not some exotic new discipline.
Recommendation 1 is pre-provision, the cloud agent. Recommendation 2 sounds like the rescue USB strategy.
Build a 2-tier rescue USB and test it before you need it. Tier 1 is a lightweight local model. A Llama with Phi-3 Mini or Llama 3.2.1b pre-downloaded on the USB so you're not pulling gigabytes over a potentially broken network. Its sole job is network bootstrap. Tier 2 is your cloud API agent, which kicks in once connectivity is confirmed. The USB should have a script that auto-detects network state and routes accordingly.
The testing part is not optional. The worst time to discover your rescue USB doesn't boot on this particular hardware is during an actual outage.
Boot from it once. Confirm the local model loads, confirm the network detection script works, confirm the cloud agent handoff completes. 15 minutes of validation while everything's running. The alternative is discovering at 2 in the morning that your Llama model is the wrong architecture or your API key has expired.
Recommendation 3. The paste bin escape hatch. Daniel suggested.
Don't improvise it at 3 in the morning when you're tired and frustrated. Write a one-liner that captures whatever URL a tool prints, posts it to a paste bin, and returns a short URL you can type into your phone. Save it as user local bin auth relay. Bin bash, read the URL from standard input, curl d at 0xz.sts print the result. Make it executable, test it once, forget about it until you need it.
The lesson underneath all three of these.
AI agents are incredible at system repair. Daniel proved that. ChatGPT diagnosed a kernel panic, walked through a CRUD environment, rebuilt grub, and saved an operating system. That's impressive. But the infrastructure around the agents, authentication, provisioning, networking, that's the weak link, and it's not going to fix itself. The agent can't provision itself onto a machine that can't boot. That's your job in advance when the server is healthy and you've got coffee and a working internet connection.
Treat agent provisioning as part of your disaster recovery plan, not an afterthought. Same way you'd pre-stage SSH keys, same way you'd document your partition layout. The AI is a tool in your recovery kit, but the kit has to exist before the disaster.
Here's the question I keep coming back to. Will the operating system vendors eventually just bake this into the recovery environment? Imagine booting from a USB, grub loads, and instead of rescue mode, you see repair with AI. You select it, the system asks if you have network, and either connects to a cloud agent or falls back to a local model on the USB itself.
Canonical and Red Hat have both been suspiciously quiet about this. Microsoft's already putting Copilot into everything. It's not hard to imagine a recovery console that says, describe the problem, and takes it from there. But the Linux world moves slower on this kind of thing, partly because the user base is more fragmented, and partly because there's a cultural resistance to phoning home during recovery.
That cultural resistance is actually a real design constraint. A recovery environment that silently connects to OpenAI's API during boot is going to make a lot of sysadmins deeply uncomfortable. You'd need it to be opt-in, explicit, and probably local first, which loops back to the local model trajectory, and that's where things get interesting.
The shrinking model trend.
Microsoft's Phi 3.5, Apple's on-device models, Cell Llama 3.2 in the 1B range. They're all pushing toward capable reasoning and packages that can run on a phone. A phone has, what, 8 gigs of RAM and an ARM chip. That's basically a Raspberry Pi 5. We're probably 2 to 3 years from a 1B model that can reliably fix a kernel panic without hallucinating your bootloader into oblivion.
2 to 3 years is not long. That's the gap between this is a clever workaround and this is just how recovery works.
When that happens, the whole authentication conversation becomes irrelevant. No API keys, no OAuth, no pastebin tricks. You boot from the USB, the local model diagnoses the problem, and it either fixes it directly or tells you exactly what to type. Offline, private, zero trust issues. The rescue USB becomes the agent.
Which brings us back to Daniel's experience as the canary in the coal mine. He proved the concept works. AI-assisted repairs saved his operating system. But the friction wasn't in the intelligence, it was in the plumbing. The auth handshake, the copy-paste loop, the phone as intermediary. Those aren't AI problems. They're infrastructure problems.
That's the thing I want to leave people with. The next frontier isn't making AI agents smarter. They're already smart enough to fix a kernel panic. The next frontier is making them reachable. Authentication, provisioning, network bootstrapping, recovery environment integration. That's the unsexy plumbing that determines whether the AI can actually help you when you need it.
The intelligence is there. The handshake isn't. Close that gap and a 2A kernel panic goes from a multi-hour ordeal to something you fix before the coffee gets cold.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
The 1964 rulebook for real tennis, housed at the Vanuatu National Library, specifies that a player who strikes the ball into the D-Dan's gallery after it has touched the penthouse roof must call chase hazard before the ball lands or the point is awarded to the opponent regardless of where the ball actually falls.
Right. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.